This episode of Political Wire Conversations is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code PWIRE. That's squarespace.com, offer code PWIRE. I'm Chris Reback. This is Political Wire Conversations. It's little secret that digital was among the key places where the last presidential campaign was waged and won. From back-end technology to analytics to engagement and more, Obama's digital campaign is still discussed and revered. How will Republicans respond? What changes, innovations, trends can we expect for 2016? From gathering donations to inspiring young voters, is there a digital divide between the parties? And if so, can Republicans close it in time? If digital is where the presidential battle will occur, Patrick Ruffini is one of the Republicans' top weapons. He's worked on three presidential campaigns and countless state and congressional campaigns. He ran digital for the Republican National Committee, twice was named a tech titan by Washingtonian Magazine, and he's now president and founder of the digital agency Engage. Patrick, thanks for joining me. A tech titan. I would hope that's how you introduce yourself to people. I mean, I certainly would. You know, excuse me, but you know, I'm a tech titan. Is that what you don't do that though? Right?
I'm joking about that a lot because I'm missing kind of the yachts and the planes that sort of come with being a titan of industry.
Exactly. That's what I would think.
It's an easy title. Some of these awards certainly sometimes are easy titles to give out. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. It's not an unfair point on your part. It's like, okay, that's fine. I'll take the title and perhaps some joking from my friends, but I'd really like the yacht that comes with it, please.
Right.
Not unfair on your part. So diving in, is there a digital divide between Republicans and Democrats, at least as far as campaigning goes?
I think we can say in 2012 that there was. All of that is really evident and apparent in the numbers. You know, you had on the Obama campaign raising, you know, upwards of $700 million on the internet. The Republicans somewhere between $100 and $200 million, the Obama campaign having, a 16 million person list, to the Republicans somewhere in the range of 2 or 3. I think we could say that at relative to 2012 when we last, saw, really a head-to-head battle, there's no question that there was. I guess the question right now is what's going on right now, and you know, how are the Republicans kind of scrambling to catch up? And there's certainly been a lot of high-level attention paid to this. You had the announcement out of the Republican National Committee of the new Parabellum Labs, which is a name for their, naming their digital and data effort. But they have upwards of 20 positions open on their website that are purely in the data engineering. You know, I think I've lost count of the number of programming languages that they make reference to in the job description. So I think like the Republicans are headed in the right direction. They've gotten the message. But I think ultimately, we're going to be judged as Republicans. We're ultimately have to be judged on the kind of numbers we can put on the board and the kind of results. That's partly a 2014 thing, but I think it's going to be in large measure a 2016 thing, just because I think in terms of public engagement in these digital campaigns, nothing's going to beat the presidential cycle, and 2014 is going to be a rebuilding year for the Republicans.
And I certainly want to talk to you about looking forward. It's certainly 2016, and you know, to the extent we can get into 2014, some of the technology, digital impacts, that'll be important and fascinating as well. But first, to look back, I mean, some of these numbers that you give, the divide in staff members and the divide in the amount of fundraising, I mean, that $700 million figure to the $100 to $200 million, which we've seen in a couple places, just an amazing disparity. And you get into it. I want to get into the Inside the Cave, which is a report that Engage and your team put together, really looking at the Democratic digital operation and the Obama operation. But at the highest level, I mean, that type of disparity and that gap, that digital divide, at the most basic level, was there just maybe a strategic decision that we're going to go into digital on the Republican side, but we're only going to go this much because we're going to put our chips on another bet? I mean, at the highest level, is that where you see things, or was there something else going on that may have contributed to this divide?
Yeah, I've been watching what both sides have been doing digitally for the last several election cycles. And there is no really, there's no way, you know, and having watched that, you know, and having observed that over several years, it's not like one day the Democrats decided to wave a magic wand and say, we're going to do digital. What we saw in 2012 and what we've, you know, kind of continued to, you know, we've kind of continued to see kind of snowball over the years, is operational excellence kind of accumulate over election cycles, where, you know, you've seen sort of Republican digital efforts go in fits and starts over a period of time. You know, in 2004, you know, I think that there's a reasonable case to be made that Republicans had the better overall digital campaign, that there was a very competitive two-party situation. And as a result, you see, you know, the RNC and other entities start to ramp up investments coming out of the election. And then 2008, kind of, things kind of fall apart in that, you know, in terms of the core digital team members, there were fewer people working on digital in McCain than there were in Bush 4 years earlier. Meanwhile, you know, Obama in 2008 was doing all these amazing things on the Internet. 2010, you know, you have these new people come in to the RNC, and there's certainly, I don't want to say there's not an effort made, but it's kind of gets rebuilt every 2 years with the new RNC chairman. You certainly had the Michael Steele era at the RNC, which was not, you know, where certainly a lot of good things were starting to get done until the money just kind of collapsed. And then you had the scramble to rebuild out of the massive debt that the RNC was in 2011 and 2012, where there wasn't much of a digital capacity or digital infrastructure whatsoever leading into the 2012 campaign. So what we're seeing is, in general, on the Republican side, just lots of false starts potentially, and not necessarily a lot of chance to institutionalize this digital culture and a permanent kind of digital presence and digital staff.
Yeah, well, why does that happen? I mean, obviously, both sides are right. You know, one's in office, 2004. Right. You know, they both are kind of having to rebuild. Stu Stevens talked about the 4 year head start, certainly, and not an unfair point. 4 year head start that Obama had in 2012. But is this decision making? Is this prioritization? Why does this happen?
I think that structure. I mean, you have to. It's structure. It's you know, a sense that you know, I think perhaps a little bit of both in the digital community and in the overall kind of political community on the Republican side, sort of an over deference to, let's say, what is the RNC doing at this given point? What is this committee doing at this given point? Waiting for, you know, frankly, people to be led, let's say, out of the wilderness by what a committee does, as opposed to kind of people kind of taking the bull by the horns and building institutions, whether they're inside the party or outside the party. I think, you know, that's really kind of started to really, I think people have gotten the message of that just now. I mean, I think that that's that we're starting to see that just now, where, you know, the RNC is actually focused on sort of institution building and creating a center of excellence and creating a pretty large digital staff, which didn't really exist before in this. But what I sense is, you know, I guess I didn't fully complete the thought from before. You know, on the Republican side, you had fits and starts. On the Democratic side, you know, things just kind of snowballed. And you obviously, it was helped along by the fact that, Obama gets elected successfully, has a successful campaign in 2008, which they can just build upon, which I'm not saying that doesn't matter. That was certainly something that helped, institutionalize and grow the level of resources from 2008 to 2012. But I think, you know, had that not happened for some reason, had Hillary Clinton won, you know, I think you'd still have a healthy digital culture and a healthy digital presence where best practices are sort of built upon from cycle to cycle on the Democratic side. We haven't had that really yet to date on the Republican side. I'm starting to see that. But again, it's not a question here of they waved a magic wand one day, they made a strategic decision one day. It was hard work done over multiple election cycles. You look at a committee like the DCCC, the reason I raise them is they're not the sexiest example out there, but they have this phenomenally successful email fundraising operation where they can raise, they raise $20 million online in the off year by basically sending these very, probably many, many, many of your readers and listeners receive them, but these very aggressive fundraising emails that people, you know, say are pretty annoying. I mean, they say things like, your supporter record is this. We don't have a record of your support, as if someone's poring over the books and sending you a personal email to that effect. But that didn't really, I mean, you see that type of effort is not something where they were necessarily the most creative. It was multiple cycles of testing and refining where all of a sudden you kind of get this flywheel effect where things start to gel. But it takes a number of years, you know, I think it takes a number of years for that to, for those types of advantages to actually pay off.
Let's talk for a moment about your recent report, Inside the Cave, an amazing compilation of data and analysis and information and people and facts and bringing it all together to tell a real narrative. What is, in your words and from your point of view, what is Inside the Cave? How did you come up with the idea to do it? Why did you do it? What's the reaction been?
Well, it's been now a little over a year since we put that out.
Yeah.
We went to Roots Camp, which is the this post-election conference organized by the New Organizing Institute every year. We did that after the 2012 election. We went back again this year. And really just to directly, as conservatives, you know, infiltrating ourselves into the belly of the beast of the left, we ended up, and we were welcome with open arms. We ended up learning a ton out of that. And having gone to that, I'm like, and having seen the reaction to, you know, the tweets we were putting out from, you know, people from Obama's email team describing how they did this, I'm like, there'd probably be some value in actually trying to distill this for a broader audience. I think it's always helpful when, we can kind of bring to light what the best practices actually are and make that happen in real time so that we can actually I think up the ante in terms of what people know, making sure that, you know, there really isn't this, there really shouldn't be, I think, this gap of knowledge between both sides. So we kind of put all that together in, a single 93-page report, tried to make it accessible, and tried to cover a number of different areas. I think that there's a great tendency to oversimplify the strategic advantages and what actually caused somebody to win the election. So in 2008, you had this heavy focus on social media. You know, I think Obama was the social media president. Well, in fact, you know, in 08, it was still very small. I mean, he had 100,000 Twitter followers on election day in 08, and that wasn't really what won him the election, and he probably would have won anyway. I think successful campaigns like the Obama campaign, and certainly like whoever it turns out is going to win the 2016 race, don't fixate on one or two very buzzworthy types of activities, but they actually try to execute relentlessly across analytics, across field, across social, across email, across all of these different areas. And we were really trying to define, at least in the context of 2012, what that actually looked like. And that's not to say that, 2016 is going to be, 2016 is, if anything, it's going to be very, very different. Because I think all of these things, all of these tactics are now much more well, have been aired, are well known. And I think we're going to see probably things that are very different in 2016 that build atop of what happened in 2012.
Patrick, I want to talk to you about those things. I want to talk to you about some of the trends that you see. I'd like to ask you a couple questions about midterm 2014 and the role of digital in the congressional campaigns. But before I get to my next question, I wanted to share just a couple of words with our audience about our terrific sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code PWIRE. In case you don't know, Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They have terrific designs for you to start with and all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. Of course, because everything is mobile now, every design also automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website. So your content looks great on every device, every time, iPhone, iPad, Android, whatever. And another feature, every Squarespace plan supports commerce functionality. That means literally every Squarespace customer can now begin selling products online. Now, while Squarespace is incredibly easy to use, if you do want some help, they have an amazing award-winning support team available 24/7. More than 70 Squarespace employees are on the customer care team, which is based in New York. In fact, the office has been nicknamed the Care Bear Lair. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for the year. So you can start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code PWIRE to get 10% off and, of course, to show your support for Political Wire Conversations. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. We're back with Patrick Ruffini, political digital strategist and president and founder of the digital agency Engage. Patrick, what is targeted sharing? I get that all shares might not be created equal, but how can you manage who shares what stuff with whom?
So this is an idea that came out of the, really out of the 2012 race, and we saw a few apps do it in 2012, but particularly, well, both campaigns actually did it in 2012. The Obama campaign's example was interesting in that, they had built a Facebook application. And obviously the one that gets a lot of the attention was the targeted sharing, application, which what it did was essentially send you an email and say, here are four friends in swing states who we think are based on matching their Facebook data to the voter file. We think they're persuadable. We think they may not be registered to vote. Can you please reach out to them? This generated about, I think it was 600,000 people sharing things 5 million times with those specific people. It kind of highlights to me that, look, in an election, not all votes are created equal. So while it's, you know, while I think it's, we campaign should not discourage folks from sharing, campaign should not discourage folks from sharing, stuff generally into their feeds. I mean, that's extremely important. But the ability to understand, okay, we can hopefully get you to identify who are your friends who live in the most important states in the election, who are also the most important voters, and get you to make some sort of personal contact with those people. Facebook did an experiment in 2010, which showed that if you had said you would vote and you announced that to your friends in the newsfeed, that lifted turnout overall by about almost half a percentage point among the people, and they measured this across tens of millions of voter records. So there wasn't much doubt that this effect, you know, actually occurred. So to me, I mean, you know, I think it's sort of, you know, what targeted sharing is, and we have certainly created these types of applications in the wake of 2012, is digital door knocking, is really kind of taking person-to-person voter contact into the digital age in an environment where, frankly, it's getting harder and harder to reach people through other means. It's getting harder and harder to reach people over the phone. The response rates are in single digits now if you pick up the phone and try to call a voter. And those who are answering the phone have probably gotten called 20 times. And it's just this very inauthentic experience that voters in swing states are going through. But what if they can get a personal message, a personal email, a personal Facebook wall post, or a phone call from a friend based on how they've been identified through the data integration that can happen with these sorts of apps? And I think it's pretty exciting.
And are you getting into here? I know you've written as well about creating probabilities around incomes for particular voters, as opposed to trying to bucket voters into what you call discrete universes. Is this kind of getting into that idea, or is this concept or the focus on probabilities and the emphasis that you're really putting on that? Is that something different? Explain that for me.
So this is in general, like, I think this is where campaigns are moving, and I think this is where campaigns are moving on both sides, where essentially how it used to work is we define a target universe, we define, our GOTV universe, we define our persuasion universe, and there really isn't much, nuance within that. It's either you're in it or you're outside of it. With the focus on sort of analytics, and the focus on sort of voter file analytics that has occurred over the last few election cycles, pioneered by the Obama campaign in 2008 and 2012, but certainly something that is, I think, pretty well understood on both sides right now, is sort of this idea that we can move away from binary ones and zeros and binary judgments on voters in terms of, yeah, this one belongs in the universe, this one doesn't. The fact is human behavior is varied. There are different probabilities that different types of people will take action. And so what you've kind of seen, I think, is sort of, in general, a more scientific approach to campaigns, where you can almost get to the point, and I think we're not quite there yet, but I think we'll get there over the next few election cycles, where there is a formula for, you know, what type of voter contact to what which individual voters is going to be the most efficient allocation of resources and is going to move the most votes. I sat in on a presentation that the folks who did the analytics for the Terry McAuliffe campaign did, And what it sounded to me was like, you know, there wasn't this notion of we segmented that, you know, we had all these different universes, and we assumed that this is the type of contact that this universe would get or receive. I mean, there's oftentimes, even in, when you're dealing with sort of political data, there are many parts of it that are not really data-driven. sometimes people can be very data-driven about the audience, but are not very data-driven about the message that they're delivering against that audience. So what I think I'm seeing in general is a move in campaigns towards being objective and data-driven about all aspects about how we contact a voter, from quote-unquote universe selection to, you know, how we determine whether they're in or out, to what messages they get, to try to project, okay, is this voter likely to be persuaded if they're contacted? Is this voter likely to be persuaded if they're contacted with a message about X? And you can almost kind of put all of these things into a formula and come out with an answer in terms of, here's what you should do in your campaign. So I think that's very exciting. I think that is not really, I mean, I don't think we're fully there yet. I think we need better data about what really works and what doesn't, to what universe. We're still kind of collecting all that data and collecting an understanding about that. But I think that's sort of the world in which we're kind of moving into, where I wouldn't say it's more science and less art, but we are kind of redefining the boundaries between art and science in a campaign.
And as you think about midterms 2014, obviously the first set of campaigns, is that too soon? I mean, you kind of just hinted we're not quite there yet. You're obviously, it sounds to me, my interpretation of what you're saying, it will take not a little bit of investment to gather the data, start to sort the data, to write the algorithms around what you get, to do the validation, which I know you've written about the importance of validation as well, and I'd love to talk to you about that. But on a very practical, tangible level, midterm 2014, is that too early for campaigns to start leveraging that? And how, and I guess if not, how can a congressional campaign, how can a Senate campaign, you know, literally get into that when it requires investment and time and expertise and the clock is ticking?
Sure. You know, I think that midterms are, you know, our challenge. Presidential campaigns have massive resources. And it's not that there won't be resources available at the, you know, in a midterm, but what I think we're going to be seeing is, you know, those resources are going to be fragmented into multiple different campaigns, into multiple different states. And so what it actually takes to, you know, create an analytics department within a campaign is it's just a lot easier to do on a scale, you know, from a scale perspective at a national level, at a presidential campaign level, than it is going to be to do it at a state-to-state within each state. I do think that people are going to pick out certain things. I mean, one of the things we are seeing tried more and more, or getting a lot of interest and buzz, is this idea of TV ad targeting. Is this idea of, we can analyze set top box data to come up with, here are the programs that our target voters are actually watching, and we can advertise on those stations, figure out, you know, the cost of advertising on those stations, and try to get a more efficient TV buy. We're certainly seeing multiple campaigns adopting things like that. And so I think we will see examples of that all over the map.
Pandora.
Yeah, and certainly we saw that announcement, right? I mean, this idea that social data, sort of this data that is being collected by third-party apps in terms of what music you're listening to, what movies you're watching, can be correlated with your with voting patterns can be correlated with the voter file to better target advertising.
Do you buy into that? And just in case for any listeners who don't know the reference, Pandora, the music serving app, recently announced that they will offer the ability based on the musical choices that the listeners individually make, kind of gather that data and offer it to advertisers. First of all, do I kind of have that right? I think I do. And secondly, do you buy that? Would you advocate spending political ad dollars on something like that?
I think that is, I certainly would. I mean, I think that's one of many venues that I think people should take a look at. And what we're really looking at is, look, we're not necessarily, when somebody comes out with a methodology like that, or somebody comes out with a process like that, it's very easy to poke holes in it and say, well, this doesn't seem right, this process. I mean, I could probably do the same thing with this announcement. That's not really the point, though. I guess the point of analytics, the point of probability, is not that we're going to get it right 100% of the time. It's that we're doing something that's better than random, right? So we're doing something that has better than even odds of success. And you want to do those things. I mean, you want to do those things in a systematic way and in a way that you accrue more wins than losses. In the same way, you have the sort of the money ball, right? The sort of the money ball idea, which is not we're going to get this one superstar player that's going to change everything for us. This idea that you need to buy runs, and you buy runs by getting hits, and you buy hits by getting people who can get on base. We're really seeing the elements of campaigns being broken down into those elemental levels and probabilities assigned to each element of the campaign to try to actually make campaigns smarter and actually make them right more often than they're wrong. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's not about, to me, spying on your musical tastes to try to figure out exactly who you're going to vote for. I would think a methodology like that is going to be wrong a fair percentage of the time, but the point is it's going to be better than random.
So does the fact that I like The Who and U2 tell you anything more than the fact that I'm old?
I'm not going to, I won't comment on that.
And
I'm
Thank
obviously
you.
Certainly, everyone I kind of show these types of analyses to are like, well, I drive a Volvo and drink a certain type of coffee and listen to a certain type of music, and I'm a Republican. I'm like, yes, but you're probably not the average voter either, at least the people I talk to. So there's this great tendency right now to try to overgeneralize based on anecdote, say, well, I exhibit these patterns and I behave differently than you might expect. But again, that's not the point. It can be wrong, but the point is it's right more often than it's wrong.
Well, if loving The Who is wrong, you know the old line.
I don't want to be right.
I don't want to be right. Tell me, in thinking about relationships and the relationships between campaigns and the voters, between people running for office and the voters, how would you characterize the online connection between a voter and a candidate? Is it deep? Is it lasting? Is it more transactional? How do you, because they haven't met in person and, all the data that we see about online relationships generally, how do you characterize in a campaigning and an election sense the relationship between candidates and the voters?
Online. That's a really great question because, I mean, there's always this question. There's always, I think, a real question of how should a campaign interact with a voter? How should they treat a voter? Should they really be viewing them as, primarily a source of donations and sort of all of the persuasion activity happens in one way or another offline? And how are they treating that voter? And I think that to me, there's a way that sort of analytics and all the focus on data could lead us astray in the sense of if you're trying to come up with the most efficient way to change a voter's mind, that's sort of a different question you're asking about how you interact with somebody than trying to actually create a deep and genuine connection with that person. I mean, if you're focused on, you know, well, it seems to me that, you know, this email got more clicks, or this email raised more money, or this appeal, this wording, this specific wording, we were able to get more donations out of them. You always have to ask, well, wait a second, are you actually creating a lasting connection with that person? Or are you doing, and I think campaigns in general feel that tension a lot. One of the things that really impressed me, you know, that's sort of overlooked, but it's overlooked with the exception of all the presentations you hear from, you know, guys at the top of the Obama campaign, like Teddy Goff, like Michael Slaby, like Jim Messina. It was this idea of treating each voter in a genuine way and with respect. And so if you're doing things that seem overly gimmicky, overly manipulative, you know, people are eventually going to figure it out. And so I think there's this incredibly interesting tension there, right, between are you doing things, are you sending out certain emails that are going to maybe raise more money in the short term but are going to cause voters to lose respect? Or can you do both of those things kind of at the same time? That's just a very interesting question, but I think that there's, if you actually listen to what folks in the Obama organization say and have said consistently over time and over the years, it's really about building, it goes back to this whole community organizing idea about building these relationships directly with voters and supporters, and recognizing that there isn't really a difference between online and offline in that regard. People don't necessarily create this segmentation in their mind about, well, right now I'm interacting online and right now I'm interacting offline. To the average person, it's the same thing. I think that, the more campaigns recognize that, the more campaigns realize that, you know, the same people, there are certain people who like to receive more information online. There are certain people who like to receive it offline, but their experience has to be the same, regardless of what the medium is.
You obviously have a great deal of healthy respect for the Democratic Digital team and the folks, and you've spent time with them. Do you ever, it's just occurring to me listening to you, and by the way, my own personal point of view is that's terrific. I think that professionals should have respect for skills on either side, any side, you know, regardless, frankly, of industry or sector. But in the, you know, political arena and in the political game where, you know, it's not just skills, but sometimes it's emotions and sentiment and feeling about issues. Do you ever get any kind of criticism or ribbing around that and on the Republican side, or no, does that not really come up? It's just kind of occurring to me as I'm listening to you talk with respect, which is terrific, about some of the folks who do what you do just on the other side of the political divide.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, no, I think that there is overall just, or should be, a sense of, look, there isn't really, in terms of the practice of a lot of these different tactics and the practice of a lot of, the strategies you might reach, you might use to reach voters on the internet, I don't know that there is this, or should be, a big of a divide between Republicans and Democrats. And, you know, I think that we're ultimately both trying to do the same thing, and we're trying to do it for two different teams. But that doesn't mean that, if I am the NFL coach, that I'm not spending the majority of my time watching game tape from my opponent's team. I mean, then in fact, in sports, that's what you spend the majority of your time doing, or that's what a number of people spend the majority of their time doing, is analyzing, dissecting, trying to figure out exactly what the other side is going to do before they actually do it. And I think there hasn't been enough of that, frankly, on the Republican side. We tend to see our competitors in the light of other, other consultants on our side, as opposed to seeing our competitors, for whom we have a tremendous amount, we should have a tremendous amount of respect, of professional courtesy and respect, as being, the Democrats. And because that's really the ultimate, objective of what we're trying to do. We're trying to win elections. And we're trying to win general elections, not just primary elections. And so in order to do that, we need to understand what the other side is doing.
And so, Patrick, to kind of close out, what's next? Let's say you've got the head of the RNC in front of you. You have the next 2016 Republican presidential candidate in front of you. What do you say to her or him?
Sure. If I had perfect knowledge of that, I would probably be in Silicon Valley building the next big app. I wouldn't be in politics. Yeah. I'll stipulate that. but I will say that it's likely to be something that's probably more boring than you think. So we tend to think about, oftentimes in terms of the evolution of digital and politics, everything is always cast in this light about being the next big thing. YouTube was the next big thing. Facebook was the next big thing. Twitter was the next big thing. Even when those platforms had been around for a fair amount of time and weren't really the next big thing, there was always this great pent-up desire to write about the next big thing. And I think in many ways, data and analytics have certainly been something that have always been sort of thought about. You saw the Bush campaign do micro-targeting way back in 2004. So this idea wasn't necessarily all new when, it was brought to a whole new level in 2012. But what you see is sort of these things that were at the fringes of campaigns all of a sudden become more and more prominent, more and more important, applied in new ways, and that in and of itself generates these tremendous results. A lot of the things that we find out work, are really kind of reminiscent of things that either worked in direct mail all the way, going back all the way to the 60s and 70s. So we're really not seeing, I don't necessarily know that there's going to be one big bang innovation, right, for 2016. What you're going to see is, I think, the integration of further integration of data in campaigns. You're going to see the integration of digital into kind of traditional voter contact efforts. You're going to see digital, I think, quantified more from a voter contact and persuasion standpoint. So it's not just going to be about fundraising. And I think that all of that is starting to happen now, but I think it's very—it's sort of this plodding exercise. This is not, 23-year-old is working in a lab somewhere and comes up with this great aha moment, and all of a sudden that takes the campaign world by storm. It's very likely going to be tweaks and iterations on things that, are already working in many respects. And the question is, how do you make them more efficient, take them to the next level? That has been sort of the story about innovation in political campaigns, as opposed to this idea of, we're going to have one big thing that's going to completely disrupt everything. I think in general, the use of technology has disrupted campaigns, but it has done so over the course of numerous election cycles and over the course of many years. And it's already well underway in terms of it actually, in terms of it actually making an impact.
Well, one person bringing digital to the next level for the political world in the 2014 and 2016 campaigns, Patrick Ruffini, political digital strategist and president and founder of the digital agency Engage. Patrick, thank you so much for your time. I'm Chris Reback. This is Political Wire Conversations.